come viene temere l'ansia. Gyanan jana shalakaya chakshurum mulitam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya mano bhishtam tapitam yena bhutale sayam rupa akadamayam tati sapadantikam Vansha kaupa turubhyascha kripa sindhu bhayebhya patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah, go ahead. Thank you. So, greetings from the Sun Falls. Stuyvesant Falls, and in our burgeoning community, I have an overflowing crowd in my living room here, listening to the class. There's several things I can do today, and I'm not really quite sure what I'm going to do. These are the three of the things that I hope to cover. I like to either before or after sometimes give the class I'm about to give. One of the things that I've been doing is preparing different talks. Not that I give just the same talk in every place that I go, but I'm staying in one area. So, some talks are the same, but especially when there's a new talk, sometimes it's helpful to speak it before I actually go before the crowd that I'm speaking. So I have two new talks coming up soon. This weekend, I have a crowd of about 20 professional people from New York, and I'm starting something called the Bhakti Experience. Because it's not a program where I advertise and people are coming cold, but it's people from my lectures who expressed a special interest in Bhakti. Because in my lectures in the yoga studios, kind of in a matter of integrity, you know, I'm speaking according to the people's frame of reference. I'm not coming in there necessarily to, give my theistic bent, but I'm picking subjects that I have learned from Srila Prabhupada that are common to people who have an interest in Indian spiritual life. For example, I may speak about karma. And that's commonly accepted. That's one of the philosophical viewpoints that's accepted universally among all Indian schools of thought, even with different conceptions, that there's an eternal moral order pushing one towards, you know, some higher ideals of selflessness. And in terms of that, I speak of forgiveness, because in all spiritual practices, what darkens the mind and hinders one's perception of reality, one of the deepest forces is enmity. And whether a yogi or you're a Vaishnava, you know, these are principles that you have to give up. And what has happened by speaking, it's very wonderful because I feel in the link I have to the Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya, our line, you know, and you don't find that in hardly in many of the yoga paths or something, such a comprehensive discussion and training on the on a very wide on all subjects, because Veda means knowledge. So Veda means what? It means the concept is when God, if you can use the story or reality or analogy, whatever you want to say, when God breathes out and the universes come out, they come out with an intention or purpose. And therefore, along with the universe, there has to be knowledge. And what is knowledge? Knowledge describes the utility of everything in relationship to that purpose. And that's called Veda, or knowledge. With the universe comes an understanding of how it's used. And that's the Vedas. And we are taught the Vedas. There's not any subject where we're not connected to the understanding and knowledge of its relevance. Ultimately, its relevance in relationship to self-realization, but that may give the knowledge of how you can actually become satisfied with something to become peaceful, how, you know, a society can be organized, how you can keep physically healthy with you know, disease, or, you know, how you can get rid of disease. I mean, it covers everything. So when you're actually connected to a bona fide sampradaya that's connected to the Vedas, you have a wide gamut of knowledge. And when you share that, people accept your authority, and gradually they inquire about your own path. And that's what's happened. People want to know what I do. They want to know about bhakti. So it's not like a trap. Hey, boom. They're coming to inquire about bhakti. You know, I'm not going to say which country because it is very dangerous, but I have friends that preach Krishna consciousness in the Muslim world. And one of them wrote me that, you know, so many people became devotees this year. And they can't even directly say, this is my theistic path, take it. How does it happen? People become impressed with their knowledge as it applies to the people in their lives. And naturally, from that, they want to inquire, you know, what they do directly in relationship to the soul. And you can even express that, not in a dogmatic way, but this is what we do. So I have it's going to be a unique program, and I think that's what I'll do today. I'll tell you a little bit about that program. I think it'll be interesting. And then on Thursday, in the same thing, in the yoga studio, where I've given classes so far on the psychology of karma, on yoga psychology, on environment, on consciousness, which is basically the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's such profound knowledge that people gain respect for your teachings. And then I gave one on forgiveness. And the last one I gave on was the heart of a yogi, the culture of humility in spiritual life. Because self-centeredness, what binds the body and the soul, is self-centeredness. So without the cultivation of humility, you're nowhere in spiritual life, really, no matter what path you're in, but especially bhakti. Because you understand the path of bhakti, it's a path that's really just trying to change your consciousness directly, not just your mind, but your heart. Because you can change your mind and become disciplined and self-controlled. You can become Aranyakashipu. That's not our path. path is changing the heart or the consciousness directly. And therefore our meditation is not just controlling the mind and focusing it on an object of meditation, which is psychological and work. It's praying to that object of devotion, the holy name, praying that I can become selfless and pure and all that is good, and realizing our dependence on the object of our meditation, the holy name, to do that for us. Srinbata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hidyanta Stoya Bhajani Vidinoti Sarit Sarit Sitam. God is Sarit Sitam. He is close in our heart. So, and then I also wanted to share with you, this class just made me an introduction, but I'll get to some real stuff. I also wanted to share with you Bhagavad Gita. Was it last Friday? Yes, it was last Friday. Yeah, we had our Bhagavad Gita up here. Great, 14 people. But like I said, even though I came up for that class, it wasn't, oh, there's 14 people. There are 14 people. And there are 14 people that are interested in Bhagavad Gita. It's not an introductory, someone's coming in, am I interested or not? These are people that are interested, that we've known for many, many years, even if they don't have a bhakti conception yet. They're seeing that this is a source where we can get some knowledge and improve. So they're going to hear the Bhagavad Gita. And I do try to present it like this. This is what the Bhagavad Gita says. Well, I said, this is the truth. No, this is what the Bhagavad Gita says. You accept Bhagavad Gita, this is what it says. I'll start by giving a little summary like that. So in the bhakti section. So what I wanted to show is that what the Bhagavad Gita is about bhakti. And bhakti begins with surrender. There's no question of devotion in your heart if the world is about you and controlling it and enjoying it. That's not what bhakti is about. Bhakti means when the world is about God and others. And that means surrender. Surrender. Give surrender what? Your egotistical, selfish, self-centered conception. Surrender. Not with your hands up on a long march with a bayonet in your back, but surrender because you love the object of your worship, which is the divine and the holy name, because you love it, or you realize that you should surrender to it. You can surrender from two platforms. One from the intelligence. This is for my benefit. I should do it. Because by doing it, eventually I'll develop love in my heart. Or real bhakti, which is you're attached. When you love, you surrender. Isn't it? If you actually love someone, you surrender. I don't know if that word has a negative connotation. What I'm trying to say is you serve. You do what they want. You try to please them. You do what's best for them. And bhakti means that the divine represents the universal interest, which doesn't mean it negates your own interest, but that's also the universal interest, that certain of your needs are met so that in this embodied life you can become peaceful for the higher endeavor of self-realization. But there is a universal interest expressed in Shastra, expressed in the heart through the super soul, God within. And that's what that when you surrender to God, when you surrender to the divine, it's good for everyone. So this in the Yoga Sutras, why does it say Ishvara Pranidhan? My life, I give to God. That's Ishwar Pranidhan literally means I surrender, I give myself to God. I think we all know what it is. There's the forces of selfishness, and there's the forces of selflessness and legitimate need. So, surrender means to give up the forces of selfishness and follow the forces of selflessness and legitimate need. You surrender means you give up. You give up what? You give up your selfishness when it's beyond your legitimate need. So, and that surrender thus therefore means that ultimately, whether it is a legitimate need or whether it's satisfying attachment, ultimately it's surrendering to the universal interest which is manifest through the sacred texts. If you're tolerant, if you're peaceful, if you're self-controlled, if you worship God with all your heart and all your soul, you honor your mother and father, whatever the principles are, you surrender to principles. And principles or dharma are connected to the soul, because when you follow the appropriate principles, it brings you closer to the soul. And ultimately, when you're situated on the platform of the soul, you are the complete object of the will of God, because you love God and your whole being wants to be an object of pleasure, and you're moving and floating in that universal desire out of intense love for the universal desire. So Bhagavad Gita is about that. It's about surrender to Krishna. It's about surrender to the divine. So what I did in my class before I discussed the ninth chapter, I discussed, because Bhagavad Gita has many subjects, doesn't it? It has karma yoga, it has jnana yoga, it has astanga yoga, it describes the universal form, it has sankhya. So I described what is the Bhagavad Gita about, because there's subjects that are apparently unrelated, but what is the theme? What is the concept that connects everything, even if it's apparently unrelated? And that's surrender to Krishna. And in classical hermeneutics, that's the science of how you analyze Shastra, classical hermeneutics, which comes from the school of Purvamamamsa, found in Purvamamamsa, they give six criteria to determine what is the theme of a particular book. And I'll just quickly repeat them. The opening and closing statements, what's repeated the most times, extraordinary claims that are made indicate the theme, descriptions of results of particular activities, particular glorification of that particular idea, and logical arguments. So I went through these. In the Bhagavad Gita, the opening closing statements are surrender. Krishna, at the very beginning, he says, I'm the soul, surrender unto you, please instruct me. That's the first thing that Arjuna does, is surrender. And the last thing that Krishna tells him is what? Sarvadhamma prityaja, manmana bhava madbhakto. The last thing is become my devotee, worship me. Give up all religion, surrender to me. So the opening and closing statements are surrender. Repetition, wow. so many verses here in the Bhagavad Gita. I gave a whole list. 7-1. Just hear from me, mind attached to me, in full consciousness of me. You will come to me. Of that there is no doubt. All through the Bhagavad Gita, I just have the numbers here. And then extraordinary claims. Dami Buddhi Yogam Tvam. Tesham Satati Yuktanam Vajitam Pritipu. Dami Buddhi Yogam. If you surrender to Krishna, Dami Buddhi Yogam, he gives you knowledge. And then the next verse, he destroys ignorance. And then the 922, he preserves what you have. He gives what you lack. So if you surrender to him, those who take shelter of him. And description of results. You attain the Lord. You're liberated from all sins. You attain the highest position, glorification of devotees in comparison to other devotees. Other paths. Yoginam api sarvesham madgate natatmanam shradhavam bhajate yomap. So may yuktam, of all yogis, one who surrenders to me with faith and devotion is highest of all. And I have a list of verses there. And then logical arguments. It says that the whole Vedas, all the Vedic knowledge, which apparently covers all subjects, the purpose of it is to know Krishna. And to know Krishna is just Vedaishta Savam Adya Vedyo Vedanta Grid Veda Vid Eva Chaham. Of all the Vedas I'm to be known. Now I'm going to talk to my little group here. You could also listen in on the line. So nice, you know. Because people don't see me when I speak, on these phone clips. A lot of times, I tell you on the phone, my hands are wailing away. I'm a preacher. I mean, I get fired up. And I always remember in Puri, I was completely exhausted. I had to give the phone class, and I was lying on my bed, because we really work out there. We go out on Harinam, and, then eat the Jagannath Prasad in the evening. We had an evening program on my back, and I saw my hands were just wailing. And that was the one where I realized that the phone was completely off the whole time, and I was just doing it to the wall, after the whole class. I was, but then I was telling you, I gave that class in Rutgers, 250 students, my subject, Defeat Mayavadi Philosophy. I'm on a stage. They give you one of those mics that, they give you one of those mics that, kind of plug on, wireless. So I can move around that stage. And I'll just tell you a funny story. In the Brooklyn Temple, they had that one room was Prabhupada's museum. But also, I think Bhavananda used to stay there beforehand. It was like an apartment. And one Sunday morning, I came up, and he was watching Jimmy Swaggart. this Christian preacher, and then he looked at me and he said, he said, hey, one day we're going to have to learn this. So then when I was in Rutgers and I was prancing on the stage, I think, yeah, he's right, look at me, my hands in the air, defeating my Mayavad philosophy. But anyway, it was nice, so nice with those students discussing Bhagavad Gita. We had a great time. And we discussed the verses. Okay, now I'm going to tell you a little bit about my idea for the bhakti experience, and it's kind of what I'm going to be doing in that program. I really, thought about it, that why did I say the bhakti experience? Because now people want that. The people who signed up, they're real eager. I mean, we didn't send out many invitations. At least more than 50% of the people said, yeah, I'm coming. That signed up. And, such an eagerness. And So this is what I thought how I would do the class. And the class is a little talk by me, and then we'd have a group japa meditation. And Lakshmita Sringa will also talk a little bit, and then we'll have some real kirtan meditations. And then we'll have prasadam. You know, really good. Amiya and Bhattarajani will, you know, be putting together a feast, a nice feast, you know. Kind of like the kind of thing that Baladev here would do. Just meditate on the people's senses. Meditate on their tongues. And slightly more healthy, but not that much. So this is what how I thought I'd approach it. The first thing I'd ask the people is has anyone ever seen a person die? Has anyone here seen a person die? It's funny, I'm asking this question, but there's Mother Kalini and Baladev before me who have a special proclivity to help people in that transition, right? They have a special... Yeah, I was there with Baladev with Kushakrata. And that was... I wish... Do you have that poem? You know, I you know, it was incredible, but I was there with Kushakrata. Mother Kalini, were you there when Suchirani left? That was also a incredible thing. You remember Madhav was there doing kirtan, the famous Madhava in that room there? And, yeah, so, but, you know, these people are not devotees. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if they've experienced, has anyone seen anybody die perfectly? And die perfectly means is undisturbed in full focus and full consciousness. Bhagavad Gita describes that. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam. If you die in the right bhav, if you die in the right mood and understanding, that carries you. The face is the index of the mind. So what we are is accumulation of our past thoughts. This is a classic Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the transmigration of the soul. Deheno smin yata dehe. As the embodied soul passes from childhood to boyhood to youth old age. Similarly, at the time of death, they will accept another body. So the perfect passing is in full consciousness, where the soul is filled with devotion and love for God. And that carries one to another destination. This is the classical Indian understanding, practically in all schools of thought, this transmigration of the soul. And what your consciousness is will determine your next station. And if your consciousness becomes perfect, then you're free from the cycle of birth and death. So I just wanted to share quickly with these students, and I'm doing this for purpose in relationship to the bhakti experience. I want to highlight the bhakti experience through these stories. So I wanted to give two stories. One story where I'm in the Himalayas, and I'm there doing kirtan in the Himalayas with a bus of young people. Who knows, maybe even the Mayapuris, if some of us were there, I don't know, I can't remember back, but we're doing kirtan in the Himalayas, and it was just an amazing experience. We get out in a small town in our bus, you drive up the Himalayas, and you see a town in the Himalayas, it's like one town, you know, some of the houses may be on, you know, going up on one side of the road, and some may be going down on the other side of the road. You know, it's just, they can only be very, very small. So we get out in these small towns in the Himalayas, and we do kirtan. And then somehow or other, you know, we ran out of supplies, and I already had gone back once, and we just all had that inspiration. Let's go back to Vrindavan, because Vrindavan's such a special place that wherever you are in India, all you can think is, let me get back to this place. So we get back, I found out that my god sister is dying. And she was a great soul, Mother Gauri. She surrendered to God fully. Her life was just for others in the most extraordinary way. You know, giving herself to others 12, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. Extraordinary. You know, and so she lived an extraordinary life of selflessness, of not following selfish desires. You know, and it was really extraordinary, and I was there, and she was lying on the floor. And this Ayurvedic doctor came in, and he felt her pulse. And he said, disease is finished. And then he said, you have 1 hour left to live. And she actually got notice. And you see a person knowing they have 1 hour left to live, and like in full consciousness, in a sobriety, have so much training of not following the impulses. You know, whatever you want. You know, you're on your iPhone dictating. Look at the message. 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 You know. Always moving your fingers, externalizing your consciousness, but having so much practice of following what is good and what you love rather than what your impulses is. I saw someone completely detached from the body. Completely detached from the body to the extent she was able to take a picture smiling 15 minutes before she left. For her friends to encourage them in the path, the bhakti. It's an extraordinary intense. The other was Prabhupada. I was there when Prabhupada left the body. My guru left the body. He came to leave and he looked at us, now I'm coming to die. And then he said, but what is death? A change of body. And he quoted this verse in Bhagavad Gita. You know, the self-realized soul is not bewildered. It's such a thing. So, not bewildered. So you can imagine the platform of yoga where you're not disturbed at that platform. At that platform, the junction when the soul is leaving the body and you're not disturbed. So also I was in Prabhupada's room. I was there at his bed. Not disturbed. Not disturbed. So all yoga is about this. Preparing one for the junction. They all say that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, it's a crucial point. So either one wants to get moksha liberated or he wants to achieve something better. And it all depends on one's ability to transcend the impulses. And that's what yoga is, isn't it? Yoga means that you choose something to meditate, and you're practicing the neglect. We even see how peaceful we come, even if we close our eyes and just observe the breath. Just that meditation and focus quells the mind. But when it gets the Bhagavad Gita and it discusses, and this is clear, it says, of all yogis, one who worships me with faith and devotion is the best of all. And why? it indicates this is the bhakti experience. What is the bhakti experience in yoga? It's not just focusing your mind on an object because you have to. You focus your mind on an object because you have a relationship with that object. Because you're part of that, you're part of the divine. And therefore you focus on that out of a natural proclivity for that. And the recommended means to actually have that focus, the recommended means is kirtan. There are different ways. This is basically what the process of bhakti means. This is how it is. Bhakti means this, is the object of your meditation is the divine. There's many ways to do it, but basically it's the divine in sound. And you focus your consciousness on that. And when you focus your consciousness on that, what happens is, because there is a relationship between the divine and the mantras and the sounds which embody the divine, because there's a relationship means natural attraction. So if you have a relationship with someone, it brings out your, in the presence of that person, if it's a legitimate relationship in the presence of that person, it brings out your relationship with that person. So bhakti, the bhakti experience means that when you focus on the divine, it brings out the nature of the soul. It's natural. And the goal, what's the ultimate goal? Prema. And what is prema? Prema is the pure love. When you have full cognizance and full faith in the object, and it draws it out fully, that's our natural position. That's the nature of the soul. When the soul becomes awakened, when the soul becomes uncovered, the soul has attraction or love of the divine, and it manifests fully. So it describes all the process. Kirtan is the best. Kirtan is the best. Anyway, I'm going to work on this presentation. I have to think of it a little bit more. So what I want is to give the people a... We'll do japa meditation. And generally, japa, you just chant the name. But especially these people have practice in yogas, and they can control their minds by meditation. So we can also do meditation. We know how our body is affects our mind, right? Isn't it? In the morning, after we take a shower, we're better able to meditate. After we go to the bathroom, we're better able to meditate. We sit up straight, we're better able to meditate. There's a relationship between... So maybe sometimes some simple techniques of breathing and things will then. And anyway, that's basically what. But I'm glad I'm giving it, because as I'm giving it and I speak, I'm seeing how I can make it more logical and flow. Because that's my desire, and that's my, generally, God's gift. So now that I spoke it, now I have to think how to do it a little bit more clearly. So that's one thing I'm going to do. Okay, I have 10 more minutes. On Thursday, I'm going to do something in the same way. I'm just seeing they want something more, so I'm going to do this thing called the Bhakti story. Bhakti means a transformation of the heart. When someone is more advanced, they're more loving. I mean, it's just, you can't get away from that. And the bhakti path, if someone's more advanced in yoga, they can just do better exercises, they can have more control of their minds, but it doesn't mean they're more loving. because it's not about that. Although, to control the mind, you have to be nonviolent, that's for sure. But, so, what I want to do is, and I'm doing this with Achyuta Gopi, they got her to do kirtan with me. So that means I have to speak less than 50% of the time because kirtan is more important. Especially her kirtans are great. So the bhakti story is, I think I want to first explain to people how bhakti is usually communicated through story. Because what is any shastra? So what's the fruit of swadhyaya according to the Yoga Sutras? The fruit of study is that it awakens a connection with your Ishtadev, or the form of God whom you have a relationship with. That's the fruit. And therefore, it also awakens attachment to a particular mantra or name. So in the Krishna Bhakti tradition, we read the Krishna Bhakti philosophy and stories, and it develops a relationship. And that's directly related to kirtan, because of all the processes of devotional service, kirtan is the best. But there's something that's even better than kirtan. It's kirtan of your beloved lords. When you chant the name of a form of the divine whom you're developing relationship with, it brings the absorption and the feelings and sentiments to the highest level. So it's usually done in a connection with hearing and chanting kirtan. So I thought I would combine the two today, that I would tell, and I would tell, or, and I would tell a story of bhakti, and then combine it with kirtan, maybe speak 15 minutes. And I call it the bhakti story, because there's one particular book that, at least in Krishna bhakti, is the foundation and emblem of bhakti. And it's the Krishna story. It's the story of Krishna. Completely. And that's called the Bhagavata. That's the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So I just want to tell a little bit of that story. And actually also, I'm planning on writing a book, because I think people need to know more about bhakti. And I want to call it the bhakti story. And it's not exactly about this book. It's about a story that exemplifies this book. So basically the Bhagavatam is this. There's a king, right? And for many reasons, somehow he's been cursed to die. He was cursed by an immature Brahmin boy. You can go into story and the story and story and story and lose it, but he's cursed to die by a Brahmin boy. And he can counteract the curse because he's the emperor of the world. He has great mystic powers, but he doesn't counteract it. When he hears it, he says, Sadhu Mene, I think this is good. Because whatever wrong I've done to attract this curse, whatever wrong I've done to attract this curse, whatever wrong I've done to attract this curse, let it be my karma and purify me from what's caused it. So Sadhu Mane, let it go. And let me take the reaction. Otherwise, if I don't take the reaction, maybe it'll go to my descendants. So he sits down and he goes to the Ganga, and he's ready to die. But now he wants to get some instruction. So all the sages of the world come, like the spiritual all-stars. And they're trying to figure out who will take the seat to be empowered, to give him the instructions he needs to perfect his life in 7 days. And then the king asks the question. He says, what is the duty of a man who's about to die, and what should he not do? And when he hears this, I'll have the whole story of Sukadev come. He says, Vyanation, your question is glorious, because it's the question that every man must ask. Because who is the man who's about to die? It's every person. So what is the duty, and what should he not do? What is our duty? What is our dharma? Knowing that our stay in this body is temporary. And he sits and he listens for 7 days. And he hears this whole story of the Bhagavad Gita, which is an incredible book, which culminates in the stories of Krishna, where one hears, not as mythology or mundane, but it's the highest expression of the soul's love and purity. And he hears that message, and he becomes completely self-satisfied. He's completely fixed, completely determined, completely fearless. And he's ready to fix his mind on the divine and on the self, which is in relationship with the divine. He's ready to fix it. And I've seen this at people's death. He's ready to fix it without any disturbance. He's completely satisfied. He's no longer going to suffer the illusion of non-existence called death, because he's fully transcended that just by hearing this powerful understanding and message. And at that time, he's just getting now, because Buddha Bhava, from that understanding, he's able to fix his mind fully just by this process of hearing this great book. And at that moment, his mother comes. And he tells his mother, you know, at this time I should observe silence. I should observe silence, but your question is Prashna Madhuri. It's so delightful. Because what she says is the Bhagavatam is the essence of all knowledge. And you heard that in 7 days. Now it's just your last day. Tell me the essence of the essence. So he has to think so clearly. And he has to realize that message so carefully. And that's what realization is. Realization means that you understand something so deeply you can put it in another form and another circumstance for people to understand it without losing the message. So he wants the essence of the essence. And that's almost like churning the milk. That's like, okay, take milk and make it into cream, and now boil down the cream and make it into burfi, you know, make it into rubbery, thick milk, you know, make it even better and better and better and better. Churn the nectar. So he says, okay, I will speak. And then he begins to tell a story which will exemplify this Amala Purana, this spotless history, this Nigama Kalpa Toragalitampuram, this Sukhamukha Amrita, this incredibly delightful spiritual essence that enters into the heart and invokes the highest sentiments of devotion. So he begins to tell this story to his mother, and that's the bhakti story. So also known as the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So I'm going to write a book on it, and I'm just going to tell you chapter one. And it begins in such an incredible way. And how does it begin? It's Kumbh Mela. Kumbh Mela happens every 12 years. And all the sages from India culminate on the confluence of three rivers, the Jamuna, the Ganga, and the Saraswati. It's the most amazing phenomenon in the world. I was there 36 years ago, you know, and I saw, practically speaking, I mean, you know, they have 30 million people coming on one day to bathe. Can you imagine that? 30 million people, and it's managed. They build a city on the bank. And it's incredible things, what Indians can do for God. An incredible city on the bank of the... An incredible city on the bank of the Ganga, on the Jamuna, Ganga, and Saraswati. And I went there. I went there. It's the most amazing phenomena. My guru said that great mystic yogis, they can travel through different... They can go down in one river and come up another river and come to the Kumbh Mela. It's the Mela. It's the festival. Every spiritual group, bogus, bona fide or not, comes. Such an amazing phenomena. And then, you know, the bathing at the auspicious moment, guaranteeing liberation. You know, I was there, I remember sleeping in a tent in the middle of the winter and getting up in the morning and just putting this woolen blanket around me and then going down in the middle, you know, early in the morning, taking off that blanket and jumping into the Triveni, and then getting out, and then going to the kirtan. And I remember Lokanath Swami was leading one of the best Krishna kirtans. And I remember I felt that kirtan as nectar coming down from the spiritual world. I was basically, when I was in that kirtan in the morning, I was turning my head and just letting it flow and nourish my soul and body and heart. It's an amazing phenomenon. When they have it next time, there'll be 60 million people coming. If you think that's difficult, sit on an Indian train with 35 people get on one seat. You know, there's a way they can expand. So I want to tell this story because what happens is the story begins with the sages. See, I'm glad I told this first because if I tell this next Thursday, the way I'll begin that story, I'll begin Marge Prickett is at the end. He's been cursed. I'll just start from there. It's 7 days, right? And he's just finished hearing the Bhagavatam. He asked the question, what is the duty of man is about to die and what should he not do? His duty is to become enlightened, to become attached to the divine, to awaken the love in his heart, and that happens from hearing these stories and hearing this philosophy. And I know it because I've done it. I teach it. You hear these stories and it's something pouring into your heart, and it's not just an intellectual experience. It's experiential. And a lot of them, though, there's this person, James Bay. He's known in the yoga scene. He just wrote me. He's opening up some center in Britain, you know. He traveled with me for 2 years just to hear the Bhagavatam. And every day for an hour and a half or two, I would explain. And he would sit and listen, and he would be, like, fixed. It's just so relishable. It's not just an intellectual experience. It's the divine manifest in sound. The divine manifest in sound. So this story begins at Kumbh Mela, and these sages had just bathed. And when you're pure and you have faith, you experience spiritual phenomena intensely. So they bathed, and they were feeling so satisfied, and then they were looking at the form of the Lord. And it's not just metal. It's an authorized form by which the divine can be accessed, and you can feel your relationship with the divine. So they're feeling in the ultimate satisfaction. And I've had this experience bathing in various holy rivers. Radhakund, Jamuna. It's unbelievable the change in consciousness that can manifest. Isn't it? And then, after that, it's what happens is your false ego gets washed as a puddle on the floor. How liberating it is to be free from the chatter, to be free from the ego, the selfishness, and feel the humble, pure self. These stages were on the platform of the self. It's just love and devotion and service to others. And they're looking at the deities completely satisfied. Completely satisfied. And then what happens in that phase? You start to worship everything. Everything becomes reverent to you. The exact opposite of material consciousness. Material consciousness, we want to be the center and we want everybody else to serve us. In this consciousness, everything is guru except you. You're the lowest. You look at a blade of grass and you say, that grass is better than me. Because it has some utility. Makes baskets, you know, whatever it does. I mean, and it, because it's not low self-esteem. You're experiencing the divine, the absolute harmonious reality to such a degree that you're feeling your insignificance in relationship to it. You're not an intellectual platform. You're in a bhav or a mood. You feel the divine and you feel your insignificance, but you feel the ecstasy of being connected to the divine. And in that way, you're seeing everyone is serving better than you. So then the sages, they're in a congregation of people and they're saying that you're the topmost devotee. They're praising everyone else. That's basically what a spiritual society is. Not people vying for the center. It's people trying to move out of the center and putting God and those who are pure there. So they're in that mood. And that's how this great story moves. Because in that mood, swelling in the heart of this Narada, swelling in the heart of this Narada is this desire that I want to find the person whose heart is filled with the greatest degree of devotion. And at that moment, he sees this Brahmin arrive. Okay, that's it for today. Anyone like to say hello? It's a little late. Anyone like to say hello? Can someone just say something so I know I didn't speak, that someone is actually there?
Something.
Hello? Thank you. Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Gail. Good. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Bajrani Devdasi.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Thank you. Good. Okay, anybody else?
This is Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Kumar from Dallas.
Hey, Kumar, you're listening on Wednesdays and Sunday. Great, thank you.
Thank
anybody
you.
Else? Okay, we'll get to the rest later. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Pope.